Welcome to the first official podcast from thebusinessofsports.com. My name is Russell Scabetti, and if you're listening to this now, you've hopefully visited my sports business blog, thebusinessofsports.com. My goal for the site was to create a valuable resource filled with news, opinions, and discussion for people working in the sports industry or those interested in learning more about it. And I thought that creating a podcast where I can interview various sports business professionals would be a logical extension to the site. So with that, let's jump right into it. I would like to thank our guest, Michael DiLorenzo, who is the VP of Corporate Communications for the NHL, for being my first official podcast guest. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah. I kind of want to start off with a little story of how I even connected with you to begin with, and it kind of leads into one of my first questions. We end up connecting via Twitter, which, for those who don't know, is kind of a social media site. You can post status updates about yourself, have people follow you, kind of leads to all different dialogues. So I wanted to talk to you about how you got into using Twitter and what you think of social media in general, specifically in sports.
Well, I'd like to say that my use of social media and Twitter in particular was the residue of good design, but it really wasn't. The league itself is positioning as a digital leader, and as part of that, I feel like it's incumbent on all of us to really be, up to speed on, where fans are congregating. And so just as a matter of course, doing diligence on, where fans are, what they're talking about, I happened upon Twitter and kind of put my toe in the water there and, found out it's been, on a very small scale, a pretty effective way to engage with people that are interested in the NHL.
No, absolutely, and it's funny because of all the people that I've connected with on Twitter, there definitely seems to be a large number of hockey fans, even compared to some of the other sports. So I don't know if there was a natural connection that hockey fans had to it, but there's definitely an audience there that I've seen.
Well, the demographics we point to as a league are that our fans are the most technically sophisticated, we say, and so it wouldn't surprise me if there are higher incidence of hockey fans there than other sports.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So along the lines of Twitter, one of the things I want to do is try to get some good questions for you. Is I threw it out there to people that I've connected with, and I've collected a couple of good questions that I wanted to kind of throw your way. People who are really interested in, with where your position is in the NHL and have questions about everything from social media to the NHL specifically.
All right, well, have at it. I'll do my best.
Great. One person who is a sports management professor specifically asked, how can sports management students use social media to attract the attention of leagues and teams? Are there particular social media tools that are important or any suggestions that you have on how they should be using these channels?
In terms of attracting leagues and teams, in what way? Attracting their interest and attention and becoming credentialed maybe as journalists?
I would look at it two ways. One is for credibility, a credential for PR or media, or the other is to promote themselves individually, maybe with the opportunity to turn connections into job opportunities.
Okay, good question. I think really, and again, from my own personal perspective, no matter what your purpose is for being there, to be legitimized, you have to sort of approach whatever the topic at hand is, with authority, with insight, and with good taste. And to me, good taste doesn't mean you have to pander to the team or to the league. You're still entitled to be as opinionated as you like, but I think you have to come at it knowing that, decorum is ultimately of importance and it's going to reflect on you. So, you can very quickly separate the wheat from the chaff in that regard. When you're on a site like Twitter, the people that are on there are using it mostly as a social tool and express themselves, pretty frankly, let's say. And you can definitely see who's on there for the purpose of networking. And in that light, I found that it's a remarkably good networking tool. I've had college students approach me looking for advice on how to get their foot in the door, whether it's with the NHL or at the club level or even with another league. And so people are definitely figuring out, organically, what's the best way to use it as another sort of arrow in the quiver in terms of being a networking tool.
All right, so I guess the key here is professionalism above everything. You know, just because you have this new channel to you know, speak your mind, you have to be very careful how you use it, because some of that stuff can come back to bite you. And yet the more professional you are, the more doors it will open, as long as you attack it that way.
Yeah, I think you've said it better than I did, and certainly more succinctly. But professionalism, for me, above all, is critical to see, because, you know, I think it legitimizes you. It gives you credibility, because, you know, as we all have experienced at one time or another, the anonymity of the internet can be empowering in the wrong ways, shall we say? And so to be able to stay above that fray is critical.
Yeah, and particularly for those who do want to turn it into a good opportunity, that anonymity will eventually go away as you blog or use Twitter. Eventually, you're going to want to put your name on something, and anything you've said previously could easily come back to bite you.
Right, and I see stories written about all the time, particularly job market stories that relate to, you know, employee candidates and what their MySpace page looks like or what they're saying on Facebook. And I guess it serves as a constant reminder for us all that, you know, people are paying attention. You know, it may seem anonymous on certain levels, but at some point, if you're, you know, if you want to be networking and, you know, some of the content you've produced online, some of which may be completely legitimate, you've got to be careful and know that it's all out there.
Absolutely. Another question from the same person, actually, more specific to what you do. Do you spend more money now on communications, maybe compared to the last couple of years? I know you've only been with the league for the past year, but, you know, speak to that a bit. And then maybe what the strategies are to enhance your public communications.
Well, I personally can't attest to spending per se, but I think, you know, what we're doing in terms of increasing communications, one is the way the league has organized its communications groups and separated it by, say, you know, what I do, which is primarily communicate with business media, is now carved out in its own specialized area versus, say, what my colleague does with entertainment PR and dealing with the universe of entertainers that are interested in the NHL or placing NHL players into what we call non-traditional media, those magazines that are really of a general consumer interest, you know, not sports magazines, but things like, you know, Men's Vogue, for example, or Men's Health. And so, you know, the way we're organizing ourselves, I think, really lends very well to specialization in every distinct area. And that in and of itself, I think, is going to create more effective communication.
Okay, is that a strategy that you think the teams themselves should kind of adopt, I guess since they're on a regional level, it's not as important for them?
Well, I'm not, you know, I don't have experience at the club level, but it seems to me the clubs have very defined audiences in many regards. You know, they are largely communicating to fans and trying to influence fan behaviors, and they're largely servicing the hockey media. Now, of course, they have their own business arms. They're trying to sell local sponsorship deals and sign local partners. So business communications is not unimportant, but to the degree they can demonstrate to the partner ecosystem that they are engaged with fans, that's going to be critical to their business success. So they have a really very well-defined universe of influence, I think, versus the league. You know, we have a number of different businesses to service. Not only are we beholden to servicing the clubs, you know, we have our own business, and within our business, we have a number of business groups, whether it's corporate marketing, whether it's NHL.com, whether it's the online shop or our retail store in New York. You know, we've got a number of different masters to serve.
Okay, understand. Along the lines of the NHL's communication plans in general, are there particular plans you have at a league level to help maintain fan interaction and engagement through the off-season? This was another question from someone on Twitter. I know you're on the corporate side, but can you speak a little bit more to the off-season types of plans?
Well, I can speak about this because it really is a corporate imperative. And, you know, I think you may have heard me say before that, you know, it's critical for us to continue to put a product, whether it's on the ice or whether these are digital products, that compel and delight our fans and keep them coming back and keep them engaged for longer periods of time. And so what we do in the off-season, I think, is part and parcel to delighting them. And two really good examples I can think of are NHL Network, which is our cable television network, and we're this season have begun to develop more original programming, long-form stuff like documentaries, and what I call sort of grander programming that you can only get at NHL Network that we believe is going to keep our avid fans sort of plugged in to hockey throughout the offseason. And two is another good example, but the Hockey Show, which is our web-only studio show that we produce out of New York. During the season, we produce it 6 days a week, and last summer we produced it in the off-season 2 days a week. But we're doing original programming both online and on television that is designed to, you know, keep storylines around the league front and center with our avid fans. And I think initiatives like that, you know, go a long way to keeping people engaged throughout the summer. But, you know, I think it's interesting to point out that our offseason actually isn't all that long. I mean, after the amateur draft, you know, you've got maybe just a couple of months there before the teams are in training camp. And, you know, now at the league level, we're preparing for the premier games in Europe that we've had each of the last two seasons. So it definitely is a condensed offseason.
Actually, along the line, something you mentioned regarding the hockey show, I've noticed in general the NHL has taken a much deeper initiative to focus on video content, like you were saying, original creative content, both via NHL Network and on NHL.tv. That along with the Game Center Live product that got released before the season started. How's the response been to the very video-focused content that you guys are moving towards?
Well, I can take these sort of compartmentalized. Game Center Live, which is our live streaming games product, it replaced and upgraded what was known as Center Ice Online. We've had a dramatic increase in the number of subscribers over last year, I think on the order of 250-300%. So we've seen a great appetite for streaming video online, particularly if it's packaged in a premium way, as Game Center Live is. We also know that video is a key driver of traffic to the site, to NHL.com, and our traffic is up at all-time highs in terms of a monthly average. And we look at statistics such as video starts, in other words, when a consumer comes to the site and initiates the watching of a video, and when we've got millions of those, but we have very high incidence of fans watching at least 50% of a video, at least 80% of a video, and then watching videos through to completion. So what we're showing is that our video, and this is all forms of video, whether it's, you know, feature-oriented stuff or game highlights, is driving real engagement with fans.
And I think that's critically important. Too many times, I think, in sports, we see, whether it's a team or league, want to take, you know, acquire visitors, whether it's by email or web, and immediately try to, you know, monetize them, you know, sell them merchandise, get them to sign up for a subscription or something. But that key engagement step, the one thing that's really building the brand affinity, that relationship between the fan and the league, ultimately will lead to revenue, lifetime fans. I think it's something that really does need a lot of emphasis on it, and it seems like the NHL is doing a really good job with that via these different video platforms.
Well, I think we're well positioned to really leverage video. You know, based on our national television distribution, you know, we have a lot of freedom and flexibility with our digital rights as they relate to video. So, you know, how we produce video online, whether it's features or highlights, documentaries, we're able to do just quite a lot with our video. And, you know, fans are really craving that higher touch, deeper experience, unique experience that they can't get anywhere else, and we're starting to deliver that to them.
You mentioned very briefly just there television, and kind of leads right into one of my next questions. You know, the NHL has been on Versus now for the last couple of seasons. Can you talk a little bit about maybe why the NHL is on Versus?
Well, our deal with Versus predates my tenure at the NHL, and so, you know, much of what I know is from listening to Commissioner Bettman speak, but a few things about Bursa's over the life of the contract so far is that it's generally well known that the production value from Bursa's has really, really increased tremendously. So they're putting out a premium product, every night that they're on the air. And our ratings on Bursa's, quite frankly, have increased dramatically also. We did a couple of record telecasts for Bursa's during last year's playoff season. And in addition, we're now up into the 75, 80 million household areas of penetration with Bursa's. So we're up to the levels where we were with ESPN prior to the lockout. And from what I've heard Commissioner Bettman say as it relates to the versus ESPN issue, because people talk about this quite a bit, is that at the time we were coming out of the lockout, ESPN has many, many sports properties to service, and the NHL was going to be sort of lumped in with the rest of them. So ESPN wanted to date us, and Versus really wanted to go steady. They wanted to make us sort of the crown jewel of their programming lineup. And coming out of the lockout where exposure was certainly going to be a front and center issue for us, the decision was that Versus would give us the attention that we wanted at that time.
Understood. And now that the distribution numbers are getting up, hopefully you guys are really well positioned, with that relationship you have.
Versus, from my own observation, is doing a number of things to increase its own visibility. For example, the college football deals that it has, with the top conferences in the country. So, they're attracting viewers outside of the NHL, and that's only going to increase Versus' profile overall, and by extension, the NHL on Versus' profile.
One of the biggest things I imagine you have on your horizon is the Winter Classic. Everyone felt it was a great success last year. You had a great game between the weather and the television coverage on New Year's Day. What were your thoughts on how successful it was, and what are you expecting for this season?
Well, the NHL Winter Classic last year, that was about 2 weeks before I had started at the NHL, and I happened to watch it up in my home in Boston at the time, and it was remarkable to see 71,000 fans come together to celebrate the game of hockey outdoors, freezing cold, but two real good teams on the ice. Mm-hmm. It was remarkable. And when we talk about celebrating the game of hockey, people were out tailgating hours and hours before the game. The game sold out in a half an hour. Just some remarkable circumstances around the great game itself. And then I talk about coming together to celebrate the game of hockey. Well, the game also drew the best rating for a hockey game on NBC in 10 years, dating back to Wayne Gretzky's last game. So, I think what it told us is that there's last year it was Sabres Penguins, but if you weren't a Buffalo fan or a Pittsburgh fan, there was still a great appetite to see hockey as a special event, played in its original environment. And this year, we're moving from Buffalo, which was remarkable, to Chicago, which, has a number of great advantages to it. One, the Blackhawks are, arguably the best business story, the best story at the gate in the NHL right now. They've got a very exciting young team. But Chicago's also the number three television market in the country, and that, that presents a great opportunity, I think, for the league, again, to bring fans from all over North America, regardless of teams they're fan for, bring them together on a day that's normally dominated by college football, but when you've got a captive audience of people in front of a TV, bring all these people together and really celebrate the greatness of the game.
Yeah, I will be sitting down watching the game. Like you said, the ratings are up, and I think it's a great event. One of the things that I commented on recently on my blog was that the NHL is unique in that they were able to take a regular season game and truly create a must-see event out of it. I mean, the NFL has the game in Europe, but that's still just any other game. There's nothing really special about it other than the locations change, the stadium's exactly the same. The NBA, I mean, there's all-star games that every league has that. The Winter Classic, to me, really stands out as truly a must-see event that's really distinct for the league.
Yeah, and, I think what the hockey can do that the other sports can't do. I mean, playing outdoors is part of the game's history and genealogy, if you will. And so bringing it outdoors so people can experience it the way it was first played on ponds and frozen rivers, but yet you maintain the integrity of the National Hockey League game. It really is a very special event. And this year in particular, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, the two teams, Detroit and Chicago, play. By that time, this will be their 701st game playing each other in the regular season, which makes them the most prolific regular season rivalry in all of the NHL history. But also, just, you know, I've been to Wrigley Field as a baseball fan, and really it's kind of like a church for baseball. And having been there in July for the press conference, and we had staged out what the rink might look like, you really got a sense, even back in July, of why this is going to be a really special day on January 1st at 1 o'clock on NBC.
I like the make sure you get the station and the time in there. Very nice.
I gotta stay on message, Russell.
Absolutely. Another hot topic across teams, leagues, everything in sports, like outside of sports, is the economy. There's no question that, you know, sports has always been considered to be recession-proof, but I think people now are starting to question that, realizing, you know, attendances are down. Doesn't have the money, whether it's the corporate sponsorship dollars or the ticket buyers. From the NHL side, what's been the impact that you've seen?
Well, in October, we announced some of our business results in the month of October, which were all quite good. Attendance was up. We set a record for October attendance, both in terms of our gross number at the gate and on percent of capacity. It was the highest ever for our first month of the season. You know, as I mentioned, subscriptions to Game Center Live were way up. Merchandise sales were up. And, you know, over the summer and then into the early part of the season, we had added new corporate marketing partners such as Honda and Cisco and Visa. And so, you know, we have reason to believe that, you know, NHL fans are as resilient as any other fan out there, perhaps more so. And as I mentioned our demos before, being more tech savvy, you know, the other things we know about our fan demo is that, you know, younger and educated and affluent. So, you know, we believe NHL fans are resilient. We think that we're delighting them with the product on the ice and the products and services we're offering, whether it's television or online or merchandise. And we know that as deep as the recession may be, how deep it may cut into individual families, that we are certainly not immune from those trends. But we think we're well positioned in terms of our product and, you know, how we're servicing fans and engaging them. And so, you know, I think like most of the leagues, it's people are taking a wait-and-see approach. It's, you know, how far are things going to fall? Where is the bottom of the market?
Yeah, I think that wait-and-see, you kind of hit it on the head. You know, it's everyone can guess, but with this type of, you know, economic impact, you don't really know how it's going to play out until you're a little farther along. I know teams are looking at different types of, you know, promotions or pricing initiatives to keep those attendance figures up, and it sounds like, you know, specifically the NHL teams have done a good job with that, with, like you said, with the attendance highs. So hopefully everyone kind of rides out the storm. I think the smaller sports are really that are going to get hardest. You know, if you read a lot about the LPGA and bike and cycling and AFL and those, I guess, smaller sports really having a harder time now. But it sounds like you guys are in good shape.
Yeah, again, it's a wait-and-see thing, and we don't feel immune, but, you know, our demos are the strongest in pro sports, and again, we feel like we're well-positioned, both in terms of the product on the ice and how we're super-serving fans off the ice.
Great. I've got one last question for you. The readers of the blog kind of vary, people from, you know, within the industry to people who are maybe exploring sports business, trying to start their own careers. You have any good pieces of advice for people trying to launch a career in sports?
The best piece of advice I can give is just to network. And it's important, I think, in networking that, you know, you're not always going out with your hand out, but you're rather offering some value to people. And that really is where the networking relationship is born. You know, my own personal experience, I was a journalist, and, you know, and I developed sources and contacts, and we had a mutually beneficial relationship. They would serve me stories, and I would provide ink to them, and, you know, I began to build out a Rolodex based on that. And so I can't impress upon people enough, especially people that want to get into sports for a living, and 99.9% of us aren't going to play it, that, you know, don't be so quick to, you know, to cast aside a contact that you may have made. Keep in touch with people. Read what they're writing. Follow up with them. Let them know that you found something interesting they wrote, or maybe you disagreed with something, but let them know that you're paying attention to what they're doing, and you can build good relationships. And, you know, worst comes to worst, if you don't get anything out of it from a professional perspective, you know, maybe you've made a new friend.
That's great advice. Michael, thank you for taking the time today. I know you're on the road, and I really appreciate it, and especially for being my first podcast guest.
My pleasure. I'm sure we both get better as we go.
Yep. All right, Michael, have a good night.
Yes, thanks, Russell.
Thank you for listening to the first podcast from thebusinessofsports.com. Please keep visiting the blog and leaving your comments. The more dialogue we can get going, the more valuable the site can be for all the readers. Until next time, I'm Russell Scabetti from thebusinessofsports.com.